Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com.
Claire, are you me? Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Our guest is John Reese. He's an author and media strategist who helps filmmakers and companies navigate the new distribution and marketing landscape. He's worked with and consulted for Paramount Pictures, Screen Australia, Film Independent, Creative Scotland, and numerous film schools and festivals to devise ways to help educate and help independent filmmakers in the new economic landscape. So Carol and I want to thank you, John, for joining us. We have many listeners who use your information on marketing.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. I'm always happy to come on and talk to Carol and chat. It's, you know, it's always a lot of fun.
So I know that there are a lot of things that you do with marketing that, you know, really make a difference in a filmmaker's life. And I think probably the best thing to ask you about first is you've actually been so far ahead of everyone on the importance of marketing your film while you are making your own film. Let's start with the new buzzword, PMD. Give us an understanding of PMD.
The PMD is actually a concept I came up with in the book, Think Outside the Box Office, because I was realizing that filmmakers needed to do this work, but were so absorbed in making the film that it was very difficult to also deal with marketing deal with the things that you need to prepare for marketing or any aspect of that while you're making the film, so that someone else should come on board to help and be a new crew member. So, you know, since there wasn't a crew member that existed, I named it the producer marketing distribution. And this person is basically to do everything that is needed to prep for distribution and marketing and eventually execute the distribution and marketing for a film. So that's identifying who the audience is, figuring out how to engage with that audience, potentially starting to engage with that audience if it's appropriate early on or during production, which in many cases it is appropriate, some cases not so much. And then figuring out how that audience wants to engage with media so that when you actually are releasing the film, you are releasing it in the ways that the audience wants to receive it, you know, because different people consume media in different ways. And, some people still watch DVDs, for instance. And some audiences couldn't care less about a DVD. So, you have to think about what your audience wants and being able to deliver to them. And then also go through it really ramps up, kind of more in post-production and, in the festival circuit, applying to film, figuring out creating a festival strategy, which would be part of an overall, what I would call live event theatrical strategy, a merchandise strategy and a digital strategy, and then executing those strategies. So it's a pretty, it's a pretty involved and complicated position, which I've done on a few films, I think there's only so many people who I think have this skill set, unfortunately, still to do this. And I think sometimes what people find is that they end up splitting up the role into different people because some people are really good at marketing and social media and some people are better at executing the distribution aspects. So sometimes you might need to you might need a couple of people to execute, but you still need, what I still feel is that one person should supervise all of those activities, and that person would be the PMD.
This is brilliant.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much, John. Let me go back with one of the first things that you said was to identify your audience. So give an example of how do they identify their audience?
You start with the film, and you think about who would be interested in watching that film, the reason that it's been a little bit easier for documentaries to adopt this new model is because usually within documentaries there's either an interest group that's already being appealed to within the documentary, and obviously everyone wants to go broad. But if you're making an environmental film about global warming, there's clearly an audience for that you can connect with. But there have also been narrative films that deal with global warming, one of which called Future Weather, and which was in the IFT lab. And, they also went after those organizations. And so there are, even within narrative films, you can identify specific, niches that might be interested. If there's a film, again, we had a film in the lab recently that dealt with organic farming, and so that would be a natural audience for them. Another film that deals with beatboxing, that's a natural audience for them. So, you just have to be, smart about how that works. And then for me, or about what your audiences are. To me, audiences aren't just niche, about subject areas. They can also be geographic audiences. There's a lot of regional films being made, and so those filmmakers should really think about, the region that they work within and getting support. Like, for instance, there's a film, again, I'm using all these lab films as references, that's called Sakinaga, and that took place in a particular town in Georgia, and it was based on a story that took place. And so he did his premiere there and got a lot of press, even got the Atlanta press up there, and really created and even made money off of that screening. He actually four-walled the local theater and got so much interest and so many people out there that he was able to make money from that audience.
Wonderful, John. Well, finding the audience, identifying your audience, then engaging. First, you say you need to decide how to engage your audience, and then you set about engaging them. So how to engage them would mean, do you do that through social networking or emails? Is that what you mean?
Well, yeah, I think there's a variety. I think sometimes there's too much emphasis put on social media, and everyone thinks it's all about social media. But, I think organizational partnerships are as or potentially even more important. For instance, if you're doing something about global warming, you might think about using social media and engaging people on that level, but I would also be contacting environmental organizations who are already connected to that audience. The difficulty is that you're making a film and, unless you're going to continually make films on the subject, which maybe you are going to. And there are some filmmakers who do that, and it makes a lot of sense to develop your own audience around that film. But these organizations have already done that, and a lot of them appreciate having a piece of media to be able to connect with or connect with their audiences. So that's, I think also influencers, which is also kind of social media, but connecting people connecting with influencers within the subject area or the audience niche, as it were. And organizations are one of those influencers. I think there's people who have the ear, prominent bloggers within the sphere, certain celebrities, et cetera. There's all different ways to connect with people. And, that's what I suggest. So it's not just, one way. And email is also really great, and I think that's, to me, still the highest rate of conversion to, you know, get people to come on board a project or to purchase something. And I, you know, it's, I really recommend that filmmakers work on developing their email list.
Amen. I totally agree with you on that. From day one, I have seen that. Being a fiscal sponsor and a partner with Indiegogo, I can tell you that that's the meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's the one thing where you're directly. Yeah, exactly. Because in the in social media, converts a little, you know, converts some, they, you know, but, you know, in much less degrees than email does. Like when I was doing my crowdfund campaign last summer, you know, whenever I did an email blast, there was a spike in contributions, you know, but the social media, you know, was moderate, but nothing like the email conversion.
That's right. There's something very personal about emails. It comes into your inbox, and I like it. Much mm-hmm. more important to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to talk about connecting to these organizations. The strategic partners is what they referred to so much. And I know mm-hmm. that one of our conversations, I asked you how you were connecting to strategic partners, and you told me that, I think it was on the cancer film you were making, mm-hmm. that your first approach was just to introduce yourself, tell them about the film, and not make a big ask for anything, but mm-hmm. connect. And so can you get into that more? I mean, how has that
yeah.
worked for you?
And then, well, I mean, we're still continuing discussions. In fact, I'm writing an email today in response to one of them in terms of how we see the relationship would work. You know, we've gotten, you know, I've met with them, you know, in person and talked to them on the phone. And you know, we've gone back and forth. And so now we're, you know, looking at next steps. And so now it starts getting a little more concrete. You know, you do want to be prepared for the, even in that first meeting, you know, they will potentially ask you, what do you want from us? You know, and you need to be prepared to answer that, you know. And I always say, well, you know, I want to, the first thing I want to make sure is that this is a win-win relationship for both of us. I'm not here just to seek things from you. I want to be able to provide something to you, you know, as much as, you know, we ask from you. And so I think that's always very appreciated from the organizations that I've spoken with to have that perspective. And, you know, a lot of what you're trying to do is to use, you know, to have them help you with screenings outreach as well as outreach for when you are, you know, when your film is available for DVD or digital for purchase or rental. So you want that outreach, and then you want to be able to provide as many things to them as possible, such as using the film for fundraisers, being able to have them sell the DVD or the digital downloads, and then they get a percentage of that, or setting up where, you know, you sell the film from your site and people are able to donate to that charitable organization or potentially pick amongst a few different partners and do potentially a sliding scale, like what the Humble Indie Bundle allows, is that you can, you know, put certain monies towards, you know, select how much money goes to the filmmaker and how much goes to the charity, et cetera. So we're definitely going to be doing that, you know, with our release, and I hope the technology is robust enough to enable us to do that at that time. I mean, I've been talking to different platforms about that, and it's all this is on the horizon and possible. And this is, you know, actually you wanted to talk about the book, selling your film outside the U.S., which I contributed a chapter to, which the Film Collaborative just published, and the other writers on the project, you know, Orly Ravid, Jeffrey Winter, Sherry Candler, and Wendy Bernfeld all, you know, wrote it. I was just one of the contributors. And I wrote a chapter about the Scottish Documentary Institute, which actually has had a full-time PMD on staff for the last 2 years. And we used one of their films as a case study. And within that case study, we talk about working with organizations. It actually goes into pretty good depth about how to work with an organization, how they work with organizations, what they offered to the organizations. And one of the ways was they developed some technology with the DistroPi platform that would be kind of a pay it. There's two things. One is you could contribute charitably, but you could also pay it forward in a way so that you would enable other people to be able to see the film. So there's a different, there are different ways that you, different price levels or donation levels that you could choose that would not only not only pay for the film, but also pay either for other people to pay to watch the film or to donate to the charitable organizations. And you know, there's a fair amount. It's a very tough subject, tough film. It's about someone dying of ALS, and so the numbers aren't huge because it's kind of a depressing film. But what's interesting is the percentages and how many people contribute, the large percentage of people that contributed to charity from that campaign. And I think it's been shown over, you know, over the number of years that if in various case studies, that if you provide people a way to add money for charitable purposes and pay what they want to pay, that people will generally pay more than what you're asking for the film. So anyway, these are all different techniques. So actually that chapter I bring it up is, it's going to be hard to cover all this in an hour. It's hard to cover any of the stuff in an hour, even, you know, a couple of hours. So if this is something that's interesting to you, I'd recommend getting the book. It's free. You can get it for free from my website. But you can get it for free from the Selling Your Film website, but you can also get it for free from my website. You can click on, and if you do it from my website, you know, just the promotion, the little added promotion, then you'll be on my email list. And we've actually started, you know, ramping up my newsletter. I'm starting to do a quarterly newsletter that, you know, has a little bit of information about me, but I try to keep that to a minimum. And what it mostly is, you know, some sort of content about what's going on in the world, as well as links to different grants and film festivals that are coming up, and other kinds of things that generally people who are interested in film would be interested in. So if you get the book from my website, then you'll be automatically signed up for my newsletter, and so you'll get both, you know. And the way I announce the, you know, for instance, everyone on my newsletter, I send the announcements of the book with the link to the download, et cetera. So that was in the last newsletter.
Great, yes. Your newsletter is superb. Thank you, John.
Okay.
Well, let me ask you about the master classes, because I understand you've conducted these classes over five continents.
I finally hit Africa last summer, so that was fun. So now I think, what do I need now? Latin America. So, you know, so still waiting for someone to bring me to Latin America. So, but I haven't been traveling to do those. The last couple of years, I've really cut down on those, because I've been traveling so much for producing the two documentaries. And, you know, besides being a consultant and a strategist, I'm also a filmmaker. And, you know, when I had the opportunity to produce this first one documentary, and then we spun off another film from that one film, we spun off a separate film. And so now it's two documentaries that I'm producing. And since I travel so much for that, I haven't been able to do as many workshops. But 2 years ago, we filmed one of my workshops, and so what I'm trying to do is get someone to, and if any editors are out there, content, I'm looking for someone to help put this together. And so if you have an interest in distribution and marketing, and you also have some skills at editing, you know, I'd love to volunteer of your time, and maybe we can work something out. So hopefully that will be out this fall. And so what it will be, it's essentially my seminars. You know, you can buy streaming, you know, different packages of the film streaming, and then some of it will be packaged with my consulting, and, you know, and I also do these monthly, I started doing these monthly join-it sessions, you know, for my Kickstarter campaign, and I really enjoy those, and I'm starting, so that will be part of the package, as well as, you know, being on, you know, being able to talk to me, you know, or having a group discussion once a month for an hour among the people who engage with the workshops that we sell online. So, the documentaries have been so all-encompassing that I haven't had a chance to focus on that. So I'm hoping to have a little time this summer to get those out, get those ready and get those out. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me just ask you, you have something called Join Us Sessions.
And that was part of my Kickstarter campaign from last year. And what that did was, at a $35 level, people could come in and talk to me and, you know, have a, participate in a group discussion and kind of ask me any question they wanted to, an hour every month. So that's, you know, that's what that is. And I really enjoy those because, you know, one of the things I really, really enjoy is talking to filmmakers about what's going on with their films. And, you know, sometimes filmmakers just have a question or two, and this is a great opportunity to just answer those questions. And, and then I also consult, and then it's more in-depth, you know, and we do more in-depth sessions. I want to kind of expand, you know, a little bit of what I offer to people. And so hopefully that will be happening in the next year. It's just hard to do, you know, it's hard to do so many different things. And I also have two kids, and, you know, so it's just sometimes it gets a little bit crazy, you know. And so sometimes I drop off social media a little bit more than I would like to. I always like to keep a presence up then there, but, you know, I'm hoping to, you know, be, as I, you know, work towards releasing these seminars, hope to be out there a little bit more in the next few months. And we also just launched the Facebook page for the breast cancer documentary as well. So if you kind of want to see what we're doing in that, you can just in Facebook, you should be able to just put in Facebook search breast cancer documentary. We just called it, the title might change, we just called it that for now to make it a little generic. So I welcome you to like it, come and like it and share it with your friends, and especially if you have an interest in the subject or if you just have an interest in what we're going to be doing over the next few months. In reference to what you were saying earlier about filmmakers marketing while they're in, you know, while they're in production, you know, what I did with the breast cancer film, because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of media and a lot of about breast cancer, obviously. And it's, you know, a lot of people have a variety of opinions. And our film might end up being a little controversial. So, you know, our goal was to work with the organizations first and, you know, spend our time doing that, which I highly recommend. And to really hold off on social media until, you know, kind of about a year before our release, you know. And so since we're hoping to be in the spring festival circuit, you know, we figured this was about a good time to start and, you know, build that audience slowly and towards the festival release we're thinking of doing a international screening day either in the spring or possibly during Breast Cancer Awareness Month in October. And, so that we would be building towards that.
Oh, that's brilliant. Brilliant. Well, so let's start. Tell us what your log line is and give us a short pitch about the film.
So the log line I actually have to call up, but it's basically about about breast cancer and the meaning of the breast in the United States. And it deals with the rise of mastectomies, which have been happening over the last couple of years. And there's been a lot of reports about over-screening and over-treatment, and we deal with that a little bit. But mostly what we do is we follow one breast surgeon at a clinic in Baltimore. It's a woman who has been a breast surgeon for the last 30 years, and, you know, she's, you know, been around for quite some time. She's seen quite a lot. She lectures about it. And she, you know, we kind of went through this period of where there used to be radical mastectomies, you know, in the 50s and 60s, well, up and through the 50s and 60s and into the 70s. And then there was a strong move towards lumpectomies, doing as minimal as possible. And now there's a swing back to doing, you know, double mastectomies, even if they're not, you know, even if the doctor would say that this is medically necessary. And so what we deal with is a lot of the real lived experience of these four patients with this doctor and what they go through in their decision-making process and post-treatment and how difficult that is and, you know, how really breast, you know, like a reconstruction is, quote-unquote, not a boob job, for instance, and it's much more difficult. And, you know, and I think a lot of people don't really know that. And the goal with the film is, the main goal with the film is to provoke discussion, you know, and amongst women, not just women who have had breast cancer or experience or someone who's experienced in their life, but also people who haven't had it yet. And, because a lot of the directors of Feminist Theorists from Hopkins, And it's interesting how breast cancer brings up a lot of different issues in our culture, and issues of femininity, issues of body image, et cetera. And so it always makes me a little uncomfortable talking about this as a guy, but, but what I think the film will, that's why we want to do this International Screening Day, is we want to get, you know, I would like at least 1,000 screenings on that day, and the whole goal of which is to have a screening and then have a discussion amongst the people who are at those screenings. So I want to do screenings from in people's living rooms all the way up to theaters, and where there would be someone to help facilitate a discussion after each of the screenings on that day, and to create a dialogue about this. And I think we'll do well with that because we did a couple of salon / fundraisers in Baltimore where we showed even just 15 minutes of the film, and showing just 15 minutes of the film elicited so much discussion amongst the women there. I just went, oh my God, yes, this is actually going to work, you know, to show the film and to have people discuss the film. It was very heartening to see that. And I do recommend that people, you know, this is just also something, you know, it was just, we were doing the screening, you know, to create this discussion, but I didn't really know how it was going to work. And I really enjoy doing as many screenings as, you know, doing a lot of screenings before release as much as possible so that you can see the impact and how the audience is reacting to your film.
Yes. I'm working with several filmmakers now who are doing outreach, and they have been raising money through grants, John, to help them with the outreach, and the money is there for you, I'm sure, with this mm-hmm. type of a film to take you across the country. Is that what you're thinking about?
Yeah, we're starting to work on those grants now, you know, and we still need to raise money to finish the film. And so the director is always reminding me of that, but, you know, I'm always, in my book I say it's 50-50, you know, and even if it's not 50-50, it's 75-25, you need to start raising money for distribution and marketing and have that in your budget. And, you know, we've had it in our budget, and we just brought on someone else to help us with fundraising, and, you know, and it's like, yes, we need this money to finish the film, but we also need to raise this money as well, you know, because I'm not, you know, I'm very well aware of that. And so that's, you know, we're definitely working on that as I speak.
Right. Because it takes 8, 9, 12 months sometimes to enter the grant and win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So you need that lead time. Right.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
But can you give us more details on how you will have these home screenings? Will you offer DVDs to people if they will invite many people to their home?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, that takes a lot of, you know, that process involves a lot of touch, as it were. You have to, like, connect with those people. That's when you need to start really bringing on more people to the team and have one person, you know, if you're successful, you know, and have a lot of people wanting screenings, you need someone dedicated to organizing that and to make sure that they have the materials, that you create a screening kit so that people know what they need to do to set up a screening. And you have this, so pretty much anyone who brings 8 people, you know, into their home all the way up to theaters, you know, and we'll probably be using Pug or Gather or some, you know, system like that to, if people want to, do a screening but don't have a venue and want to do it in a theater, we'll be using those kind of online platforms, one of those online platforms. And, the idea is we'll probably do 1 or 2, you know, targeted theatrical releases in that same weekend. So we'll do a one weekend kind of big screening, you know. The weekend will be a big screening event, but the screening day will be probably on that Sunday. And then we'll probably have a couple of, you know, screenings on that Friday as kind of like quote-unquote premieres. So
that's brilliant. That's a great launch plan. I know when Robert Redford, he did this film about water and the demise of the water out here in the West and how mm-hmm. precious. It really is. So they said, if you will have 10 people see this film, we'll send you a screener. So I signed up. They sent it to me. And would you believe they call me about 3 weeks later? And, of course, the first thing out of my mouth is, only 8 people have seen it so far, but I am going to get the other 2. And she died laughing and said, okay, but Carol, tell us what you thought about it. Give us some feedback. And I was amazed that they really wanted to hear what people had to say about it.
No, I want to have, like, when we do it, I've already talked to Ira at Emerging. We did this with the Joffrey film where, we have these theaters that do it, and you actually netcast a panel discussion into as many theaters as possible. And I'm hoping to do that with as many homes as possible, too. But that's probably going to be a little difficult. But frankly, I'm more interested in those homes or smaller screenings having their own discussions. And frankly, I would like those people to film it and then send it to us. And then we can edit some of those discussions, what people feel comfortable with sending to us, and even post some of those, or at least be able to get the feedback, from these discussion groups and see like how the discussion, went. And, it'd be great to, put something out, that from those discussions and to be able to not just get feedback over the phone or via email, but actually really see what happened, And
oh, John, that is brilliant. People would love that because it's important to let everyone know that their voice matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, we're planning and it's still complicated and we're trying to raise money for it, but we're working on creating an online storytelling platform and where women can upload their stories, women and men can upload their stories about, breast cancer, either their personal experience with having it or their experience with their family and loved ones. That will have video, audio, and text. And then also be searchable by type of person, meaning whether it's someone who had breast cancer or a family member, and then what kind of cancer, what stage of cancer, what type of treatment, and different, concerns that went into their thought process, such as they would be prompted with a question of, tell us about your decisions about having a mastectomy. And they would talk about that and we'll probably have a time limit of safety. They would talk about that for a couple of minutes. So that women who are trying to decide, and then there would also be what were your experiences with your, if you chose a mastectomy, what were your experiences afterwards? So if someone's trying to decide whether to do that or not, they could actually see and hear stories from real women about what their experiences were.
I think that is really important because everybody thinks it's an easy operation. You heal quickly, and it's not.
It's not a long healing.
Some people have complications, right? Haven't you found that?
Yeah, some people, one of our characters has had many complications, and we've been following her through her whole course of treatment. So that I think that will be really interesting for people to see. And it's been very hard on her. And, our director has been great at creating this relationship be able to follow this woman through all of her treatment. And I think it's something unlike what anyone's ever seen before, because there have been a lot of breast cancer films, but I feel that ours is unique on focusing on this one, this one aspect of it.
Oh, I'm so glad you're doing that. It's really important for people to see something and listen to other people before they make a final decision. Well done, John.
Thanks.
Well, I read that Daily Variety listed you as one of the 10 digital directors to watch. That's a great compliment.
Thanks. And that was a while ago when I made Better Living Through Circuitry. But I like to think that I've, still fulfilled that in a sense, because I made Vomit and then Vomit 2 and I think that my work with distribution and marketing is kind of like an outgrowth of that. So, and that's why I say, it's like one of the things that I think I have as a little bit of a unique perspective to help other filmmakers is because, I don't just talk about this stuff. Not that talking about it is that, it's good, but, it's like I often do it, and I do it for my own films and for other people's films, but I also practice this in my filmmaking practice. And, you know, I think that's important. And sometimes, you know, and that's why it was great to work on the breast cancer documentary and the other documentary, because it's great to sometimes get back, because I've been doing a lot of consulting and, you know, and releasing other, you know, releasing my film and releasing someone else's film. And it was really great to get back to filmmaking too. And, you know, and yeah, it's just great to stay in it, you know. And me these days, probably if I was to, you know, the thing that, you know, I encourage filmmakers to think about is episodic. And, you know, with the new model, you know, which is about, you know, a lot of it is about engaging audience. I think that it's, you know, it becomes increasingly difficult to create one film and then release it and then move on to another film that might be quite different. And then you have to almost start again creating a new audience. I, as much as possible, encourage filmmakers not to do that and to, you know, to develop an audience. And I usually think from one film and carry them to the next. And I usually think that even though you might make one film about breast cancer, the other film might be about something else, that there's something that is within the filmmaker that carries through from film to film. But still, there are these large gaps between when the films are released. I think that it's important for filmmakers to think about providing regular content. Now, if they're a feature film director and they only want to make feature films, I think that's one of the reasons to try to, you know, involve the filmmakers, involve your audience as much as possible in the filmmaking process and, you know, let them know what you're doing, et cetera, and have them, you know, be a part of that process. But I also think that, you know, it makes sense, you know, that episodic content is another way to approach this where, and this is why, you know, I think you see that HBO and now Netflix have moved away from one-off features and moved towards creating series, because they realize that when you have a series, audiences will come back to see the future episodes of those series, and it's a way to keep audiences engaged, you know, with your platform. And same thing for filmmakers, it's a way, episodic is a way to keep a constant engagement with your audience. The problem, though, is that it's very difficult to constantly create content, and it's going to be, you know, we're in the baby steps of this now for independent filmmakers and how this can work for independent filmmakers and whether it's sustainable and how it can be sustainable. And it also depends on the kinds of content that this appeals to. I was at the YouTube studios recently with one of my CalArts classes, and, you know, we asked, because the class is pretty much oriented towards dramatic, you know, independent narrative, and, you know, they said that it hasn't really worked that well for that yet. You know, and that a lot of it is still personality based and, you know, comedy and genre based. And, you know, but eventually I think it will shift, you know, and I think it's, again, we're still in the very early stages of this.
Well, tell us that you were at the YouTube studio doing what? I didn't get that.
Oh, I was at the YouTube studio, this spring. They do, you know, they have groups of people that come in, they have open houses. The YouTube studio is in Los Angeles, and there's a couple around the world. They have studios in different cities around the world. I think there's one in London, there might be one in Paris. And what the studio does is if you are a partner that has, I think, 10,000 subscribers or more, you can use the studio for free. But they also have classes on how to maximize the use of YouTube and your presence on YouTube. And so, you know, it's for certain filmmakers, I think it's applicable for many filmmakers, or other filmmakers, not so much. You know, but they do a lot of the, there's something I've recommended to people. There is a YouTube handbook, or at least there used to be. I think they maybe took it down in lieu of people watching their web video instructional videos. But YouTube has a lot of interesting information on how to engage audiences and, you know, through those handbooks that they have that I think is applicable for all filmmakers.
Well, that's great. So you can download the YouTube handbook.
You used to be able to. They were saying, I'd have to double check that, you know, but you can go, they certainly do have a place on their site where you can, you know, they have how-tos of how to, you know, improve your viewership on YouTube, you know.
Right.
So, okay.
I think it is the most unused and the most wonderful asset we have as filmmakers to start your own YouTube campaign and rather start your own show on YouTube and upload information about your film as you're making it and build your audience through YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One way to go,
I think it's
right?
Yeah, definitely. The thing is that it really, that is, and I would, you know, because YouTube is the second most searched search engine. I think it's second or third after Google. So people do go there to look for content and to watch things. So it does make a lot of sense. It is, you know, in terms of making money from it, the metrics are you really have to have quite a big viewership to make any money from it. It doesn't, you know, most people, I think, still experience, you know, trickles of money. But if you, you know, take off and you're rather successful, people do make quite a lot of money on it, you know.
Great. All right. Well, I several things you said that sounded so good. So tell us with your film now, let's go back to that. Are you working as the PMD on the film, or what is your title on the broadcast?
Yeah, well, I'm the producer on the film, and I am also the de facto PMD. In fact, I started as the PMD, kind of consulting on the film, and then it seemed like they needed a producer, and I wanted to, you know, get back into filmmaking, and you know, they had a budget to hire me to help produce it. So, you know, I got him on board that way. And I also really thought the vision of the director was amazing, and I liked the project, of course. And, you know, and it's been a great two-year adventure so far. And, but yes, I've been the PMD on the project, and so I'm the one who's created the distribution strategy and the marketing strategy, which became part of our business plan. I'm the one who's been just, you know, having all the discussions with the organizations, the potential organizational partners. I've gone to conferences and met with people, you know, and bloggers, and we've done our blog research. We haven't started doing the blog outreach yet. We're waiting on that a little bit longer because, as I said, we're slowly building our social media presence. And so, yeah, I am the PMD on the project, and, you know, my goal is that we'll raise money for the distribution and marketing, and that I'll be overseeing the distribution and marketing of the film as well.
Okay. Well, let me ask you what you just mentioned, the business plan. Did you use that for funding your film?
Yeah, yeah. And let me tell you that being a PMD on a project and being the producer, it's really hard. And, you know, and we have some people on board who are helping me with the marketing, but, you know, it again showed me how important it is to have someone else doing this to help. I think if it wasn't me doing it, it would be very difficult for me to do it. But I also realized how difficult it is while you're making a film to devote the resources to this process. It's, you know, when you're struggling to make the film and raise enough money to make the film, you know, and you need to spend money on an editor, it's hard to convince a director, even for me to convince the director, that we need to allocate these resources. And we have, you know, but it's a constant budgetary discussion. What was your question again? Sorry, because I went off on my little tangent.
Oh, all of this is really important. What would you say is what percentage are you putting into marketing from the incoming funds? Would you say it's 20-30%?
No, at this point, no. I mean, and it's mainly because, you know, a lot of the work now is manpower, and I'm doing that. And, you know, we've gotten some people to come on board and work for not so much money, and and also my co-producer, Rebecca Messner, has been very helpful. And we have someone in charge of our social media, Leah Robertson, you know, and she's, you know, she was a former student of the director and ended up doing social media for a long time out of school. And even though she doesn't really do social media in a regular job, she's really good at it. So she came on board to help us with social media. And then I'm also working with Amy Slotnick to help me with further outreach, because now that we've done the breast cancer, we've made some inroads into the breast cancer organizations the next phase that we have to do is women's organizations and women's health organizations. So Amy's been helping me with that. But everyone's been really generous, you know, on with their time. And so I couldn't really, you know, the percentages wouldn't really reflect the amount of work that's gone involved. So I would say, you know, even though, you know, at this point it's maybe 10%, not of budget, but of resources, but that will start shifting over time as we finish post, you know, so that it then becomes 20, 30, 40, you know, and as we get into the festival circuit, then you're 100% marketing and you're finished with your film. But the reason it's kind of 50-50 and you need to think about it as 50-50 is because even though the percentage might be small while you're making your film, you still want to be doing it. And then the percentage of time devoted will shift as you're in post-production and approaching your, you know, your festival theatrical release and the rest of your release, so that it shifts from 2 years of production and post-production to like a year and a half of distribution and marketing. And so eventually it will become some level of 50-50.
Of funds put into the film versus funds into marketing distribution, right?
Yeah, I don't just use funds, but I also think about resources. So when I talk about 50-50, it's not just money, it's also, you know, it's also time. You know, so for a lot of filmmakers, it's sweat equity. They don't have the money for this, so it's the amount of time that they have to put in. And, you know, so, but yeah, I mean, I would say that, you know, probably in all we'll end up 25% of our overall budget will be distribution and marketing. You know, may end up going up more than 25%. Maybe it'll be 35%. And so, you know, but in terms of the resources, it'll end up probably being more close to 50-50 in terms of, you know, the time spent on it. And, you know, the hardest thing I think in the new, you know, with this is that, you know, I still see filmmakers, you know, struggling to make films and having the resources just to make a film. And you really have to slot away and really think about how you're going to engage with the distribution and marketing process, you know, because you are going to have to allocate resources to that. And I think that's also one of the reasons it's hard to create kind of a sustainable PMD base is because a lot of filmmakers don't really have the resources to pay. There are people who are qualified to be, if not PMDs, at least, you know, associates or co-PMDs in handling the social media side or handling other sides, but the filmmakers don't really have the resources to pay them yet. And so what a lot of, and I think this is one of the questions that you wanted to talk about, is what I find is that a lot of filmmakers working with up-and-coming, you know, kind of assistants and, you know, people who are have a lot of, you know, good skills that can be converted into these skills. But then you need to spend a decent amount of time, you know, fundraising, not fundraising, but supervising those people.
That's right, John. And finding someone who really cares about the subject is imperative, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. And that's,
well, this,
you know,
this is
and that's,
filmmakers
it's
tell
not
me
the
when
easiest,
we marketing, they the say, I just don't have the time. I don't have the time.
Yeah.
So I suggest that they go. They look at people who are studying social networking in college. Mm-hmm. A lot of schools and colleges that are giving great classes, and what better than to graduate with a credit on a film as a social networker, right, on a film.
Exactly. Yeah, I just got a text from my son who just called me, so just when I'm done. And I don't recommend, I don't think necessarily that filmmakers are the best for this. I think you're right that it's better to go to business schools or marketing departments and find who is kind of up and coming and that who has those skills for that. So, you know, so that's, you know, that's what I recommend people do. And there are people out there. I mean, I see filmmakers who find these people. They're a little bit harder to find than you may think. But, you know, because it's certainly you're not, it's not as sexy as filmmaking. You know, it's like they're not editing. They're not in on a set in production. And you know, so they're a little bit harder to find, but I think people have found them, and I think the best thing to advise people is to not look, not to post on entertainmentcareers.net, et cetera, where you might post for film crew, but to look around and post, you know, at universities, local universities, where, you know, recent graduates or people who are still in school who have these specific skill sets.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's good advice. Now, just one last thing is I am in agreement with you that the whole world has come to the decision that they love to be able to sit down and watch a whole series at their own time and place. So
right.
What else are still a risk? Because you're going mm-hmm. to invest an hour and a half, 2 hours, and you don't know if you're going to like that film, but you do know you would like this series, so you choose the series mm-hmm. over the one-offs. So mm-hmm. how do you recommend that filmmakers who have an important subject, like your breast cancer, your film would be exactly the right type of information that would lead to part two, part three, part four,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right. Yes. So we're probably not going to do a part two, part three, part four unless someone, but we do have this idea that we were going to go to different countries in the world and do like an international extension of this. But we'll see if that gets funded. Based on the success of the first film, we tried to fund it beforehand, but it didn't really, you know, it's like, okay, let's just fund the one film and not worry about the rest of the world. We actually went so far as we found a crew in India. We found a hospital and a crew in India to do it, but then, you know, we didn't have the resources, even though it was relatively inexpensive. We didn't have the money to engage that. But we still might do that after this. But so what our plan for that is essentially the storytelling site that, you know, where this would, we have a lot of extra content from the film. So one of the things that we're going to be doing, you know, editing as we finish the editing of the film is editing webisodes as well as even web series, because we have a couple of characters that we followed pretty far that aren't ending up in the actual feature film that, you know, that we have quite amount of information with them and experience with them. So those will probably be web series that we'll release over time. And then we also have these webisodes, and these will all be, the idea was for these to be hubbed around the storytelling platform. And if the storytelling platform doesn't happen, then we still will have this web content, this web material that we'll release strategically during the release of the feature film to continue the discussion and continue the process. But our whole goal with the storytelling site was to engage organizations to partner with us on them, and then that those organizations would actually take over the storytelling site when we moved on to another film, because I think it's important for the life of a project, and I think they're all very excited about that. Because, you know, otherwise you're, you know, unless you're a filmmaker, there are certain filmmakers who want to be engaged with one particular subject matter for quite some time, and there's a number of them out there. But most filmmakers will want to, you know, do different topics. And so if you've created discussion in an area, you want to be able to, you know, make sure that people can follow through and you keep that community alive. Like one example is the Food Inc. people, my understanding, because I'm also working on I've been consulting on a food project, you know, that those, and so I've looked into a little bit, that the people who did Food Inc. have kept a very active list, that group of people who initially were supportive of that film are still a pretty active community, and those filmmakers have done a number of things to keep that community active online. So, but getting back to your point about series versus one-off, yes, I do think that there is, you know, a potential for series. The thing about one-off that is difficult for series to do is that they're good for creating events around. And so those events allow you to dent the media landscape, you know, in ways that studios can do or larger institutions or HBO, Netflix, et cetera, can do through advertising. And so what independent filmmakers can do is to coordinate publicity around events which are harder to do with shorter content. the difficulty, I think, with series, for independent series, is how do you create an audience and how do you develop that audience over time. And so, but I think it is possible. It's going to be a longer, more organic approach, and it might be one in which people who create series also do events, you know, in combination, where maybe they don't show the feature, but maybe they show three episodes, you know, where, you know, they have 40 minutes of content that they'll do at an event, and maybe they'll have bands or comedians or something, whatever is pertinent to the actual web series, and do those events to help raise the profile. And I think it's important for filmmakers to get away from the notion that things have to be 90 minutes. You know, I'm almost thinking like with the, you know, that you can do an event, like if we had a 45-minute film about breast cancer, for those discussion events, it might be even better because you're allowing more time for discussion. Or if you're having an event with a comedian or a band, you don't need to make people watch a 90-minute film. They can watch a half-hour film or a 40-minute film or 40 minutes of content and then watch, you know, watch something else. Like, I think it's really interesting, like, some of the people who are doing interesting events are This American Life, who has kind of like almost like a vaudeville kind of variety aspect to it, and then also Hit Record, which is now a TV show, and they've done live events where they combine, you know, film, poetry, music, et cetera, so that it, and that helps make it more of an event instead of, oh, it's just another film screening.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh, you're just so full of brilliant
ideas.
Thank you so much, John.
Our
time is up, but we want you to tell us how people...
Well, let me just say one thing is that, well, maybe we can combine this. If anyone's out there doing this, what I've just been talking about, please contact me through my website or, you know, and let me know, because I'd love to talk to you, because I want to actually start writing more about series now. And then if anyone can contact me, I do consult. And you can contact me through my website, which is johnreese.com. I think that was your next question, Carol. And,
right.
So was there something else?
johnreese.com, right?
johnreese. And maybe you guys can put it on your website where the little article is for this, but you know,
yes,
that they can link to my site from there. And that way they can also get a copy of the book for free. You know, they can get a few chapters of Think Outside the Box office for free as well there if they want to check that out, haven't checked it out yet, and et cetera.
Great. Oh, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing all your brilliant ideas, John.
Okay. Well, it's always
yes,
fun to be on your show, and I hope to be on there again when I have the streaming seminar out. And so that people can access, you know, can access that, because I think we're going to price it very competitively. Let me put it that way.
Well, that's exactly what we'd like to know about, and we will. We'd love to have you back then, because I'll be one of the first people to take your seminar.
Okay, great, great.
Okay, take good care. Thanks for everything.
Okay, thank
yes,
you guys. Okay.
Bye. All right, John. Thanks. Thank you, Carol.
Okay.
Thank you,
okay,
Claire.
Thank
lots
you, Carol,
of love.
Okay,
I want
thanks,
to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Production. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.